Well, 8 o'clock on Friday mornings means it's time for our Week in Review. We take a look at the top news stories of the week from a couple of different political perspectives. John Munson in for Joy Cardine for this week's edition of the Week in Review. My guest, Steve Prestigard, journalist and blogger at steveprestigard.com. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. I'm happy, I hate to say this, but I'm happy that you had the problem with the report because that allowed me to finish my breakfast seconds ago.
Okay. Well, good news on that. And our other guest, Louis Fortas, editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express. Good morning, Louis.
Good morning, and good morning, Steve.
Morning.
Okay, let's dive right in here. Lots to talk about in the Week in Review. First of all, is Governor Scott Walker's campaign trying to reach a deal to end the John Doe investigation? His latest twist came up in a Wall Street Journal editorial this week. The paper blasted Walker, saying, sounds like Mr. Walker has to decide whose side he's on. Wisconsin Club for Growth, which has sued prosecutors on First Amendment grounds, sent a letter immediately demanding a stop to any talks, saying they would violate federal court orders that halted the probe. Walker's campaign responded with a statement yesterday that says neither Governor Walker nor his campaign committee are parties to the federal lawsuit, so they have no legal standing to even reach a deal. The thing is that these negotiations would be happening in state court, not federal, so we still don't know what's going on. Steve Prestigard, let's start with you. If Walker is in fact seeking some sort of a deal, is that a wise move on his part, or does he risk alienating his allies by essentially throwing them under the bus?
He is definitely throwing his allies under the bus if this is what's happening. And, you know, anybody, regardless of their ideology, ought to, you know, certainly think that this is the major problem with the John Doe investigation, that you don't know what's happening. Nobody knows what is happening, independent of all of the problems, all of the really bad things that are about this. I don't know why people, however, would be particularly surprised that Scott Walker is acting like a politician, because Scott Walker is a politician, and he's interested in getting reelected in November, obviously, maybe or maybe not after that. But I think the Wall Street Journal editorial is pretty much right on, that he is, or perhaps somebody on his behalf, is trying to make a deal that makes Walker end up looking good and doesn't really care about these other groups who are supposed to be supporters of him, at least.
Louis Fortas, what's your take on the latest John Doe dance?
Well, I agree with Steve on the part that no one knows what's going on for sure. So everybody is guessing and speculating. So the thing that is interesting is how aggressive this Club for Growth has gotten. Usually when the prosecutor starts stepping in, people, you know, get very legal and they, you know, don't say anything. They're very careful and measured in what they say. And on a John Doe where it's all secret, one would think that, you know, you'd want to play ball and go along with the law. The Club for Growth has gotten very, very aggressive. So I'm not sure what's going on, other than you think about this and you think, why would they be getting so aggressive and why would they be fighting so hard? Other than the fact that apparently the prosecutors have the goods on them. And to some extent, whether it's real serious or moderately serious, but for some reason, they're fighting very hard. And this idea of now kind of throwing essentially Walker under the bus, the Club for Growth is doing that, and the Wall Street Journal seems to be cooperating. It's just very, very interesting to watch. And again, we're only guessing. No one has any idea what's going on.
I want to, before we move on with continue to discuss this topic a little further, I just want to make sure that people know that they can call in and let us know what they think about this topic and anything else that we're talking about on the Week in Review at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, email address talk@wpr.org, and of course you can always leave a comment or question on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. So, I know neither of you is a legal expert, but how concerned are you about a deal violating the injunction that's in place? Steve Prestigard, what do you think?
Well, I'm not a lawyer and I don't play one on TV, so that's hard to say. It is. If you want to make one observation out of all this, it seems pretty obvious. Remember that this was all supposedly about illegal coordination between the Walker campaign and his supporters, and that certainly doesn't seem to be the case anymore, does it? But, you are talking about state law versus, you know, that ends up in federal courts, basically, and, I really can't say. I'm not an expert in state law or federal law. All you can judge this on, as Lewis pointed out, is, you know, what this looks like, and you know, it's a little bit of a head scratcher the last day or so with this. It kind of looked like the whole thing was going to die, basically, because Judge Randa kept punting it. But it does make you wonder now exactly what's up. And, of course, again, we don't know.
Lewis Fortas?
Yeah, again, I go back to the fact that you wouldn't be fighting this hard if there wasn't something there. So, if you're worried about Walker throwing the Club for Growth under the bus, or, you know, and as a result of trying to throw Walker under the bus first, there is a bus there, and something is happening. And so you really wonder how serious this is. And it's basically, on one hand, they're saying, you know, this is it's not serious, this is not really an issue, and all of a sudden now they're fighting real hard to see who gets the blame for this, quote, non-issue. Something's going on here that's bigger than the Club for Growth and Walker's administration wants to really admit.
Steve, is it your sense that there's any wrongdoing with this whole John Doe thing, not just this latest development, but the whole case?
I think the wrongdoing has been on the part of the Milwaukee County DA's office, and that, you know, essentially they are trying to persecute people based on political beliefs that don't correlate with theirs. That's where the wrongdoing is. Let's remember that there are several people in the Milwaukee DA's office who signed the recall petitions for Scott Walker's recall election back in 2012. I think this particular case that occurred in the last week or so that we might end up talking about is a demonstration that, just to be real brief, that the priorities of the Milwaukee County DA's office are in absolutely the wrong place.
Lewis Fortas?
Yeah, I think that's I totally disagree with Steve on this one. The Milwaukee County DA is one of the straightest shooters this state has. He's a former military. He's a very, very, very precise fellow, very, very honorable, very ethical. I think going after him is really a mistake. And this idea that there are people in the DA's office that signed the recall petition, I'm sure there were, and then you can look at the fact that this prosecutor, Schmidt, is a Republican and says he voted for Walker. So the one who's really the political person and the real culprit in this is Randa. Randa is a very, very right-wing ideologue. And he's the one, the judge, who's, has a reputation of, and I say this very politely here, carefully, I mean, he has a reputation of not being the sharpest knife in the drawer, and a very ideological right-wing guy. And he's the one that's, you know, kind of politicizing this more than anyone else. So if you want to put the, if you want to say it's being politicized, look at Randa.
We haven't really spent that much time talking about the federal judge in the middle of all of this stuff, but there's certainly plenty of discussion of that in the press and in the blogosphere. Steve Prestigard, what's your take on Judge Randa?
You know, I'll be honest about it, since I don't live in Milwaukee by choice, I'm not really familiar with his work. What I will tell you is, is Judge Peterson also a right-wing ideologue? Because he ended up quashing the subpoenas on the grounds that the DA's office hadn't shown probable cause. And I guess if you think that that Randa is this right-winger, the answer to that, I suppose, is to kick it up to the Federal Court of Appeals if you really think you're not being fairly treated by Judge Randa. And I don't think that's going to end up happening. Whatever happens, I think it ends at this particular level.
800-642-1234. Let's take a call from Claire in Baraboo. Claire, good morning.
Good morning, Glenn. I'm very disturbed by Scott Walker and this whole John Doe stuff. I think we've got to get to the bottom of that, number one. And number two, Judge Randa All kinds of things are coming out in this last week or so about his connections with the Koch brothers and Alec. This man is not a fair, unbiased judge, for heaven's sake. And something's got to go with that. He's got to be taken out of this case at the very least. I'm not sure how that can be done, but...
Claire, thanks for the call. Steve Prestigard?
She's calling for the impeachment of a federal judge because his views don't align with hers. Call me skeptical, but I'm going to guess that Claire has never voted for Scott Walker and will never vote for Scott Walker. So, I guess that federal judges get lifetime appointments so that Republican presidents can put their people in and Democratic presidents can put their people in. And that's how the system works, like it or not.
Louis Fortas?
Yeah, Steve, I don't think you should be attacking the caller like that. The caller didn't ask for him to be impeached. The caller basically said that he should stand down on this case and because he is too political and he is too, and things are coming out that he is very, very connected to the ultra-right. And it's not just being a Republican or a Democrat. I mean, this is the extreme right. And people have known for years that Randa has been an extreme right winger, but his cases have never been this prominent as this one is. So I do not think I think you're exaggerating what the caller said. The caller wasn't saying he should be impeached or anything silly like that. The caller is basically saying this is a highly political case. It's very clear that he's shown his political stripes in a very far right wing, and it just makes sense if he wants to be honest as a judge and have some integrity. He should probably say, I'm not the right judge for this case. There are other judges that can pick this case up and do it.
Here's a comment from Barbara on Facebook who writes, so the Koch groups find a friendly judge who will stop the investigation. This is what we have become under Walker, corrupt. Walker will have to make a deal because there was massive vote rigging in the recall election. Since the GOP has to do it again in November, it had better not be scrutinized in a court of law. What will Wisconsinites do if Walker is allowed to walk? Louis Fortas, we'll go to you first on this, and then Steve Prestigard will get the last word on this topic.
Okay, I think the big thing is this idea of, the vote rigging and all that stuff. I don't really think there's a lot of voting corruption going on in the state at all. I think the problem is just the issue of big money coming in and having a huge influence on these elections and distorting the elections and misleading people and is out and out lying. And I mean, that's where the real issue is. I don't see us having people double and triple voting. I don't see any of the stuff that goes on in some of these former Soviet Union countries and that when it comes to vote rigging. So I think there's a problem here. I think Walker understands there's a problem. I think the Club for Growth is very nervous about this issue because I think it's clear that there is something going on here and they're trying and what their response is to get very aggressive and attack the prosecutors.
Steve Prestigard, we'll give you the last word on this topic and then we'll move on.
Well, let's remember that the Koch brothers are the employers of, I believe the number is 2,400 people in the state of Wisconsin. And as long as government has the right to tax businesses, as long as government has the right to regulate businesses, and as long as government has the ability to harass businesses out of business, then the Koch brothers have not only the right, but I would argue the responsibility to be engaged in the political process. You can talk all you want about money and all of that, but, they're only talking about 2,400 private sector jobs. They're one of the biggest private sector employers in this state. Anybody who is listening to this who works for Georgia Pacific, guess who owns them? That's the Koch brothers. So that is my 2 cents worth about the Koch brothers in politics.
All right, we're going to take a break when we come back. A lot of other stories to talk about. A new ad campaign launched by Americans for Prosperity. Some things going on with Mary Burke's campaign. She says she's open to toll roads. Wisconsin tax collections are lagging behind last year. We'll talk about that. And hopefully we'll take some more of your calls and Facebook posts as well. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's our week in review. Each week at this time, we get a look at the top news stories of the week from a couple of different political perspectives. My guests today are Louis Fortas, editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express, and Steve Prestigard, journalist and blogger at steveprestigard.com. The conservative group Americans for Prosperity is spending $866 million on a new television ad that touts Governor Scott Walker's policies without mentioning him by name. Americans for Prosperity spokesman Christopher Nefa says the ad launched Tuesday will air for 3 weeks in all major markets. Titled It's Working, Wisconsin, the ad features people talking about Walker's proposal passed in 2011 that effectively ended collective bargaining for most public workers and required them to pay more for pension and health benefits. Steve, are Walker's reforms working?
In the sense of, state government is now actually fiscally responsible in that sense, yes. The unemployment rate in this state is lower than the national average, so yes. It appears as though personal income growth, which is something that has lagged behind the national average under both Republican and Democratic governors for literally decades, that started to turn around. He's not going to get the 250,000 job growth number, obviously. I don't think, going to get any political flack for not getting it. Things are better than they were. Things are not as good as they should be.
Louis Fortas?
Boy, Steve, you should run for office here. Sounding like a politician.
Nobody would ever vote for me, Louis.
good point. Sorry about that one. Governors realistically do not have a lot of impact on the economy, but they do certainly have an impact at the margins. I mean, we're in a world economy, and then there's a federal government and a national economy, and so governors are not able to have the impact that a small country would have, for example, in terms of controlling their economy. But what you can do is look at how Wisconsin is doing relative to its neighboring states. And you take Minnesota, which is the one state that we're always being compared to and was kind of like our sister state. And Minnesota did not go through all the conservative policies and changes that the Walker administration pushed through. And as a result, you can say, okay, they're both facing the same world economy. They're both facing the same national economy. So what's different and who's doing much, but who's doing better? And Minnesota is doing far better. Their growth rate is better. Their job creation is better. They're better on most all of the economic indicators. So the question is, if Walker's policies are so good, why are we not doing that well? Now, Steve is saying, well, we're lower than the national average on unemployment or whatever. The real thing is looking at our neighboring states, because we're experiencing the same things in the Midwest, a certain same weather climate, the same, we have similar economies, we're industrial economies and agriculture, and we are not doing as well as our neighbors. So when you look at all that, you say, no, I mean, his policies are not doing particularly well. And this idea of the 250,000 jobs is not a big deal. Yes, it's a big deal. That's what he ran on. I mean, here's a guy who, dropped out of college, doesn't have any kind of economics background, anything, never really had a real job other than working for a nonprofit beforehand, has no real experience in the private sector. He comes in, he says, I'm going to create 250,000 jobs. He pulls that number out of the sky. People, trust him for some reason. They vote for him. And he's failing miserably on that. It's not like he's close. It's not like he has 200, he may have 230,000. He's like less than half. And yes, he should be held accountable for what he's saying, because if that is his main promise in the election and that's how he wins, and then you say, well, he's only kidding. No, that's not acceptable.
Steve, why aren't we doing as well as our neighbors?
Oh, I don't know. I think Wisconsin's doing a whole lot better than Illinois is. And Illinois has, Democratic politicians at every level of state government. You have to remember that I think one of the problems is that Minnesota has always had a better entrepreneurial climate than this state. And again, that goes far before Scott Walker, far before Jim Doyle. That is, there have been people in economic development who have noted that for literally decades. And, you know, people in Minnesota have gone into business. People in Wisconsin, more often than not, have been content to go work for somebody else. And one of the problems is that still in this state, Wisconsin doesn't have the right entrepreneurial climate at the state government policy level. That's one of the problems. There's, you know, one of the things about entrepreneurs is they fail. They go out of business. Their business, you know, didn't work and it goes out of business. I think in the climate in this, the cultural climate in this state, people don't like failure. And because of that, I think people in Wisconsin have traditionally, and this literally goes back more than 100 years, have been less interested in going into business than perhaps people in Minnesota. Minnesota, for one thing, as you know, has a huge number of corporation headquarters, far larger than Wisconsin has, and that's one huge difference as well. But, you know, if Lewis wants to say that the policies aren't working, then obviously there need to be more tax cuts, there need to be more regulation reform, and more of a encouragement of people to go into business. So Wisconsin hasn't had that.
Let's take a call from Bob in Reidsville. Bob, good morning.
Good morning. I don't want to take a lot of your time, but I want to set something up here. We had something called Act 10, which saved the state government about $1 billion. I look at it a little differently. I look at it as kind of a backdoor tax increase that was laid on the backs of the people who happen to be public workers. 3 years ago, July 1st, that act took effect. At that point, there was $1 billion less in disposable income being paid to people in every community in the state. At that point, our economy kind of slowed. To that point, we were growing. After that point, we weren't growing. My concern is that up here in the Green Bay area, we always talk about how the Packers bring in money, and it turns over 7 times in the community. If that impact is the same, then this $1 billion has a $7 billion impact on the state of Wisconsin. Disposable income not being spent in every community. And the governor can go out there and say how he saved the state. I, in fact, think that perhaps he lit a little tax increase on a certain group of people. We wrote that off, and that's the $1 billion that he saved.
Steve Prestigard?
Well, I'll agree to some extent with the caller that, yeah, it did end up costing public employees money because, yes, they did have to pay money out of their income, more so than they ever had to do before. And certainly any time that happens, that means there is less in there. However, let's consider who the beneficiaries of that is, and that is the people who don't get paychecks from government but pay for it through their taxes. This is still the fifth highest taxed state in the country, and in terms of state and local taxes. And the thing that I notice is that Mary Burke is taking this kind of tightrope thing going on where she doesn't like Act 10, but she hasn't said that she's going to repeal it. So if you think that this is, you know, just a temporary thing, if you get the right governor and this is all going away, I don't know that that's really the case.
Let's move on to another topic, but it's related. The Department of Revenue shows state tax collections lagging behind both last year's collections as well as this year's expectations. The state reportedly collected $10.5 billion in taxes from July 1st through April 1st, down 0.2% from the same period last year. The budget has built a 1% growth for this year, so coming up short could hurt. What's going on here, Lewis Fortas?
Let me go back, since I didn't have a chance to comment on the last question. I used to be an economics professor, and so I have a little understanding of what the caller was talking about, with the multiplier effect and all. And the caller is absolutely right that the way you stimulate economies, you get money in the hands of people who are going to be spending the money. So they go and they buy more groceries and more shoes for their children or whatever the case may be, and then the owner of the shoe store spends money in the groceries, and it goes on and on, and it gets a you multiply the effect of that money. Seven is a pretty high multiplier, but a three multiplier or four multiplier is certainly within what most people would argue is what happens in the world. And so, yes, when you do what Act 10 does, takes money out of the pockets of, you know, average working people, and then give tax cuts to the wealthy who are not going to spend that extra money that they're getting, that distorts the economy, that hurts the economy, and then you have a multiplier effect that has a big hurt on the economy. So the caller is correct. The policies that have been that the Walker administration has been promoting and has passed are not helping stimulate the economy. And you see it, as you know, in this next year, the next question, in the tax collections. I mean, people are not spending the money because they don't have the disposable income, and that's why you don't have the tax revenues coming in.
Steve Prestigard?
Well, let's see. The Feds reported earlier this week that the economy actually, shrank in the first quarter nationally, so that might be the explanation right there for taxes. It is interesting that the Journal Sentinel is reporting one thing. The Walker administration says they're going to end up with $100 million surplus. So I guess we'll see. I guess we'll see who's right. I still maintain that I would rather see tax dollars in the pockets of the people who actually to pay for those state government or for state and local government employees, wages and benefits, which are the benefit part, as everyone knows, are substantially better than the people in the private sector. And their wages in a lot of parts of the state are also better than in the private sector as well. But, you know, I guess I really trust the Walker administration based on their past performance to be able to deal with a budget deficit if that in fact happens, than what we saw with the Doyle administration. And the Doyle administration's ham-handed efforts on state finance are the direct reason that there are all these Republicans in Madison now.
Mary Burke did some campaigning this week, including a stop in the Milwaukee area. She spoke about the need for transportation and infrastructure to expand Wisconsin's economy. She mentioned that toll roads are a concept worth considering. Would toll roads be a good idea here, Steve?
You know why we don't have toll roads now? I mean, it is simply because nobody likes them. And it's partly inaccurate. You know, they look at the Illinois tollway system, which, you know, had until relatively recently stopping every 20 miles or so to throw money in. That's not really how tolls work. They have the I-Pass system where so you end up driving past. But toll roads are not – we don't have toll roads because people have never wanted toll roads. And I think that Mary has to explain why we should, on the one hand, pay some of the highest gas taxes in the state and, on the other hand, also pay tolls.
Louis Fortas?
First of all, let me straighten the record out on one thing. The tax revenues they're talking about collecting over the past year. Yes, the weather, the severe weather in the first quarter hurt hurt basically the sales and retail and everything in the first quarter. So, but you were looking at a whole year. So Steve's explanation maybe explains a small part of it. But you're talking about a whole year, not a first quarter. So. We want to just clarify that. The other thing is this argument about the Doyle administration was failing and the Doyle administration. I was not a big fan of Jim Doyle in a lot of ways, but the Doyle administration was very successful in many, many ways. So I don't know this argument that they failed at something is foolishness. But going to the issue of the toll roads, the toll road is a user fee. I mean, the people who are using it should pay for it, is what essentially, you know, the way that works. And the reason that we don't have tolls is when they first did the interstate, it's a question of how much money you took from the feds. And if you took, I think it was 95% of federal money to pay for the highways, you had them keep them free for X number of years. And if you took a smaller amount, you could pay for it than with tolls. And I think the idea of a toll road is certainly worth talking about and discussing, because you'd be bringing in a lot of money from the people from Illinois. And I think it's a fair game, if they're going to be coming up here and using our resources, that they should pay for them. So a toll road, and I think as Steve pointed out, you don't have to be stopping at the toll booth and throwing in the money. They do it electronically now. And we would be able to recover some money from Illinois for using our and utilizing our resources. I don't think it's the worst idea. I think people wouldn't initially like it, because nobody wants to pay an additional tax. At the same time, they would get used to it and realize that it's actually saving them money. So I think it's worth consideration.
Mary Burke also criticized Republicans for putting more emphasis on limiting voting than gun violence. Her comments came after a 10-year-old girl was gravely wounded during a shooting at a Milwaukee playground. Burke said in addition to working with community leaders, she'd engage families to help prevent young people from leading a life of crime. Louis Fortas, is that the way to solve the problem?
Oh, I think it's more than law and order. I think anybody in law and order will tell you that you do have to work with the families. You have to, you know, try to develop more jobs to get people feeling like they're not, you know, that there's hope for them in the world. There's a lot of things that need to be done beyond law and order. But looking at the at her first point is, you know, if you're comparing those two things about voter suppression and guns out of the hands of people that shouldn't have guns, whether they have mental illness or whatever the case may be, or convicted violent felons, if you look at the laws that have been passed since Walker's been in office, there's been nothing to curb gun violence and a whole lot to curb voting in this state. So if you want to make that comparison, she's absolutely right.
Steve Prestigard, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss says the legislature helped pay for an expansion of Milwaukee's Spot Shotter program, which senses and verifies gunfire and pinpoints its location. He also said he also criticized Milwaukee County District Attorney John Chisholm for pleading down so many violent offenders. What's the key to reducing gun violence in Milwaukee, Steve?
Well, for one thing, it would be helpful if an 18-year-old who has 15 previous arrests wasn't let out on the streets by the judge who got the last case of Sylvester Lewis before this shooting. I think that Mary Burke's answer was a horribly bad answer. That is not an answer, even if there is a grain of truth to what she says in a larger sense. That's not going to help this little girl's family, got to engage the family. No, the very first thing you have to do is make sure that people, like the two people who are shooting at each other, are not on the streets. Both of them have been through the court system. Apparently, from what was reported last night, the other person involved apparently was in prison for killing somebody, and it's unclear to me why he was out on the streets. It's unclear to me why the guy who's the alleged shooter was out on the street to be able to shoot somebody. If you want to point blame, you can point blame at the police chief in Milwaukee, who apparently, you know, sits there and apparently would rather wring his hands and blame Republicans instead of doing the sorts of policing strategies that actually work. And there are instances, there's books, in fact, about policing strategies that work. Essentially, it involves huge numbers of police officers in this direction, in the bad high crime areas, which apparently they don't bother to do in Milwaukee. It also involves the district attorney prosecuting the right sorts of things, the office prosecuting the right sorts of things, and it involves judges that don't let people skate on crimes, which is apparently that is the reason that there's this little girl who's in the hospital right now as the innocent victim of a shooting.
Lewis, a quick response to Steve on getting tough on crime?
Well, I mean, first of all, Steve made it real clear. He said initially, I don't live in Milwaukee by choice or something like that. So there's obviously a little, a little hostility toward Milwaukee. But the fact is, the thing is that these issues are very, very complicated. No, we don't let murderers go, free and have them going out there killing more people and letting them go free again or something. I mean, that's all very, very naive and silly talk. The fact of the matter is, it's very, very complicated. And, you know, the policies that Robert Voss is talking about is something that occurs after the fact, so that the shooting would have taken place. Now, what you have to do is something that's very, very complicated and long-term, because if these problems were simple, they would have been solved a long time ago. And right now, I mean, if you want to deal with it, you start looking at, you know, better schools, you start looking at more jobs, you start looking at trying to, you know, build stronger communities and family structures so people can have a job and can hold a family together. And, yeah, that sounds, liberal, naive, or whatever you want to say. But, you know, that's the only thing that's going to work. And if you talk to the people who are into the criminal justice system, they will tell you the same thing. In the short term, you know, you got to keep the streets as safe as possible. But that's not a solution. It's just a short-term thing to try to allow society to move forward a little bit. But you have to look at these bigger issues.
All right. Well, we'll take a break, and we'll look at some more issues when we come back. And we'll also have the Week in Review quiz. I know you're all waiting on the edges of your seats to hear our quiz question this week. We're going through this week's issues from a couple of different political perspectives. Louis Fortas, editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express, is with us, as is Steve Prestigard, journalist and blogger at steveprestigard.com. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's the Week in Review here on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. My guest, Steve Prestigard, a journalist and blogger at steveprestigard.com, and Louis Fortas, editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express. 800-642-1234, talk at WPR.org, and the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, all ways to get in touch. Let's take a look at this week's Week in Review quiz. As the summer driving season begins this week, the Wisconsin State Patrol is nabbing speeders both from the ground and from the air. That's nothing new, but for the first time, the agency is telling people when and where the aerial enforcement will take place to get people to slow down. By what means is the State Patrol getting its message across? That's this week's quiz question. By what means is the State Patrol getting its message across? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234 is the number to call, and the correct answer and a random selection of all the correct answers will produce this week's winner, and they'll receive a valuable prize. Irony intended. All right, let's continue on with our review of the week's top news stories. We mentioned gun violence in Milwaukee before the break. There was also, of course, a mass shooting last weekend in California. 7 young people were killed, including the shooter, near the University of California, Santa Barbara. The incident has renewed calls for tougher gun laws and questions about how to prevent another mass shooting. Do we need tougher laws? Louis Fortas, we'll go with you first on this one.
I mean, there's two sets of issues here, and we have to deal with both of them. And one is dealing with mental health and basically accepting the fact that there's a number of people that have serious mental health issues, and we have to just accept that and work with it and try to help these folks more than we're doing right now. And secondly, there are too many guns on the street, far too many guns on the street, and no one's talking about taking someone's hunting guns away, their rifles or shotguns, whatever. But when people have when they're armed to the teeth, and you're able to just go out and you can buy these guns at gun shows where you don't have to have any kind of background checks, stuff like that, you end up with people having more guns than they need. And if they have an episode, a mental health episode, and there's guns laying all over the place, yeah, people are going to get killed. So you have to deal with both those issues.
Steve Prestigard?
Well, it's funny you bring up the laws, because, California has background checks. Apparently he passed his. California bans assault weapons. He didn't use that. California bans high-capacity magazines, and he only used a 10-round magazine. Oh, also, he killed 3 people by stabbing them to death. and he also drove over a bunch of them to injure them. So, I mean, the state of California gets high grades by the gun control types, and none of those laws apparently worked. And the reason, of course, is that, you know, the only people who are deterred from doing something because there's a law, or there's two groups. The number one group is people who do actually respect the law, which happily is the majority of people in this country. And a smaller group would be the people who may or may not like the laws, but they're concerned about the consequences. And it's perfectly obvious that Elliot Rodger really didn't care about the consequences of what he was going to do. Every single mass shooting that has occurred in this country, going back to Columbine and probably before that, it's been demonstrated that there are a multiple number of federal and state laws that have been violated in terms of possession of guns and all of that. So obviously the whole gun law issue doesn't work because it's not deterring these maniacs, and that's the best term I can use for Elliot Rodger. It's not deterring them.
Louis Fortas, do you want to respond?
Yeah, I think just the term maniac is a good example of what I was trying to say, is that we have to deal with mental health in a more serious and professional manner. And, Steve, I didn't talk about assault weapons. I didn't talk about, size of the clips and everything. Those are all issues that you're bringing up, setting up the straw man. I'm simply saying that you have to look at both those issues, both the mental health and the amount of guns out there in the world. So, you can set up whatever straw man you want, and you can call people maniacs, but that's not going to solve our problems.
Let's move on to another. Go ahead, Steve.
Give him a chance.
Real quick, Lewis did mention, there needs to be new laws. Well, in California, there already are the laws that are supposed to prevent those sorts of things. And the point I'm making is they're not working because laws don't work for people who have no interest in the consequences of the laws.
Let's move on to another topic. We dealt with this earlier in a previous hour of this program, but the VA health care scandal, big news in Washington and across the country this week. House Speaker John Boehner says he's reserving judgment about Veterans Affairs Secretary Eric Shinseki. He says even if Shinseki steps down, it won't get to the bottom of the problems at the VA's troubled health care system. We also learned this week that vets at the Phoenix VA hospital waited an average of 115 days for their first medical appointment. That's 91 days longer than the hospital had reported. Lewis, should Shinseki step down, or is the key to fixing the problems? Is he the key to fixing the problems at the VA?
First of all, I think it's an absolute disgrace. I think we send young men into war, and when they come back, we not doing a great job of helping them recover from whatever injuries, mental or physical, that they're getting from the war. I think this is an absolute disgrace. I think it is a scandal. And I think it's also real easy to say, well, just fire the top guy and everything will be fine. I respect Boehner. Boehner is standing up and saying something that's difficult in a situation like this to say, wait a second. It's more complicated than this. Shinseki was a general. I mean, this guy didn't become a general by sitting on the sidelines. I mean, it's not easy to become a general in the military. So I think he knows how to fix stuff. I think if we empowered him a little more, or now that he has the facts, give him a chance. The thing that's very, very interesting, there's only one veterans group that is asking for him to resign. The others are saying, the guy's done a pretty decent job. So if the veterans in general, other than the one group, are willing to give him a second chance, I think the rest of us should kind of step back and let the guy try to clean things up. And a year from now, if they're not cleaned up, then his head should roll. But, getting rid of the top guy and then you feel good, because you say, well, we did something. No, you didn't do something. You just, you grandstand it. Give him a chance to fix it. If he doesn't, then I think you have plenty of an opportunity to get rid of him.
Steve Prestigard?
Well, number one, and this is the cynic in me talking, Boehner is reserving judgment because he doesn't have to say anything. This is playing out regardless of whether he needs to grandstand and say that Shinseki needs to go. He doesn't need to go. It is not an issue of, is Shinseki personally responsible for the Phoenix VA hospital. Well, maybe not, but he's responsible for the entire operation of the VA. That is a military concept, by the way, this idea of your, you know, whether or not it's your fault, it is your responsibility. I would be surprised if he's still in office by Monday. There may be only one veterans group who's calling for him to be fired, but there are a whole lot of politicians, and they're not all Republicans who are saying that he needs to go. And that is what makes me think Shinseki is not long for federal employment.
Let's move to a state issue. State Democrats are planning on voting at their convention next weekend on whether the party should back gay marriage and recreational marijuana use. Lewis, you're the lefty here. Are these good positions for the Democrats to take?
I think platforms represent what the two party loyalists want. And I think they've set out an ideal. And I think that most candidates will pay attention to it. They'll read the platform and then have their own campaigns and their own positions. So I think if this is the position of the people who are very active in the Democratic Party, I think both of these are very reasonable positions. But I think one of them is very popular right now, and the other, we'll see what happens in the two states that have legalized recreational marijuana. And, you know, 10 years from now, we might look at both these issues and say, well, of course, they're obvious. You know, why are we even talking about them? Certainly, we feel that way about one of the issues now. I think the second one is we'll see what happens in those other two states and see whether recreational marijuana does seem to work. I don't know. I think the jury's out on that one.
Steve Prestigard?
Well, same-sex marriage is going to be decided in the federal court, so the Democratic Party's position is kind of meaningless in that sense. As for marijuana, you know, the Democrats had control in Madison in 2009 and 2010 and did not pass recreational marijuana. Mary Burke apparently doesn't support recreational marijuana, which gets to Lewis's point that, you know, that's what the party thinks. That's not necessarily what their candidates think. There's a little bit also in the campaign platform about resisting outsourcing, you know, employers who ship jobs overseas, and that seems to be a description of Trek bicycles. So it's going to be interesting to watch Mary finesse. You know, here's the Democratic Party platform. Not only does she apparently not support significant parts of it, but she doesn't live parts of it as well. So, but, you know, Lewis is right. Once the campaign or once the convention is over, how many people even know what's in a party's platform?
Okay, well, it's time to reveal the answer to our Week in Review quiz. Congratulations to our winner, Randy, in New Berlin. We asked, by what means is the Wisconsin State Patrol informing people of where and when it will conduct aerial enforcement for speeders? And the answer is Twitter. One such example came Wednesday at 10 a.m. when the Wisconsin DOT tweeted, State Patrol aircraft looking for speeders on I-94 in Kenosha County late morning and afternoon, hashtag slow down. In 64 aerial enforcement missions last year, the State Patrol reportedly made more than 2,000 traffic stops and handed out 1,300 speeding tickets, including one to a driver caught doing 108 miles per hour in a 65 mile per hour zone. Yikes. So, Steve and Lewis, think these Twitter heads up are going to result in people slowing down?
Well, that depends if they're able to check the Twitter hits on their... Oh, wait a minute. You can't text while driving.
No.
You're not supposed to read either, so apparently it's not.
All right. Thanks, Lewis and Steve, for an enjoyable hour. It's the Week in Review every week here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson in for Joy Cardine. Bill Martins produced this program. Justin Williams handled on-air production. I'm John Munson. It's the Ideas Network.